Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Carmen Miro, and you're here tonight with us listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, and this is sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Jeff Danilek, that's our speaker for tonight, he'll join us to talk about reincarnation. Yet before we get started, I just want to make sure that you all remember you're here also to meet with our psychics. Here we have our co-host, Steve. How are you tonight?
I am very well, thank you, Carmen. How are you?
Excellent. Really looking forward to this show. Steve, you're an astrologer, right? What else do you do?
I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer.
That's correct. Well,
I've been giving readings with Psychic Access for, gosh, 4 years almost now. It's gone quickly. Time flies.
Wow, hey. That's quite good. Thank you. And Stephen, you're here with us tonight. You, what do you do, your specialty? You're also a psychic, and what kind of astrology do you work with?
Well, I am a medieval astrologer. I specialize in using ancient methods that are geared primarily toward prediction. Like Steve, who is my colleague and friend, I am also a hermetic occultist. And I also specialize in tarot, so what I like to do is blend the two tools, tarot and astrology, and it's quite a powerful combination.
Phenomenal. And Maureen, thank you. You're here with us, too. You are a tarot reader, is that correct?
Well, yes, I'm an intuitive psychic consultant empath. I use a tarot as my main tool, and I feel that my view is this, tarot is a symbolic record of human experience, and so this is my work. I love my work. It's what I must do, and there you have it. For 25 years I've been doing this professionally. Thank you, Carmen.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I'm going to give you a little background on our speaker, Jeff. Jeff is an author and paranormal researcher, and he has a passion for the sciences, a background in the military, and a penchant for investigating the unusual. So he's a natural skeptic, but he's very kind-hearted. He has a great sense of humor, and this expert has assured me that he's been able to research and debunk any events or urban myths that may or may not be true, anything that we can think about, including UFOs, whilst assuring us that that there's indeed real supernatural events that do occur. He is a researcher of ancient civilizations, legendary mysteries, and hauntings. And he started work when he contributed to Fate magazine in 2002, has written over 10 books in the past, and this has encouraged him to research and publish his work. Yet the note that what I really want to introduce you to tonight is his background. He has spiritual beliefs that were reformed from an evangelical viewpoint. And through his work on extensive factual, historical, and case studies on reincarnation, he's even has analyzed the Bible's viewpoint on these concepts. So we are so pleased that he could take the time to meet us tonight. And you can explore Jeff's research and his ideas and his experiences on the link provided on our website, also at www.ourcuriousworld.com. So is Jeff with us yet tonight? Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you doing, Carmen?
Hi, how are you? Nice of you to join us. And well, nice to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here. It's nothing else to do tonight on such a rainy night, so just sit and talk to like-minded people and see if we can learn anything from each other.
Exactly, rather cozy. And that means the rain is coming our way on the East Coast here, too, for the listeners
we'll
that want to know
there.
The weather here while we're at it. That's
right.
Good. So, Jeff, I had just a chance to review some of your work, but why don't you help us understand what you've done? Because you have a wide body of work and background that you've actually authored and penned. Can you tell me a bit more about your last, your most favorite books that you've actually researched in the past?
Well, asking me which is my favorite book is like asking me which is my favorite child. You know, it's it's not fair. I've enjoyed all of them. They've all led me in different directions. The books have been kind of an outgrowth of my spiritual journey. I started out looking at reincarnation, and then that led me into ghosts, and then I would ask things like, well, how does, extraterrestrials fit into all this? And so then that would lead me into UFOs. So I just kind of follow the lead of spirit, whatever direction it leads me. And then I try to put together my thoughts into a form that people can get some objectivity with. I don't try to convince people of any one particular position, and I try to point out the flaws as I see them in some people's theories, to not to humiliate them or belittle them, but to see if we can find the truth through all of this stuff and come to a better understanding of what's going on in this amazing world we live in.
Yeah, and what I wanted to explain to my listeners is, for example, the type of work that he tends to do. This man is certainly not gullible. He does do his research, and that actually his background is an interesting primer for this, for him to be able to take out any theories or correct on any theories that we might find plausible, such as, you know, I was reading a little bit on your UFO work, and what I found was very interesting was your work that you did on the Majestic documents, your research that you've done on that, and obviously that you had some knowledge as to how these documents were presented in the military or in the CIA, and how that fit into your writing. In other words, he's very good at being able to parse how certain things are presented and sniff out any inconsistencies in major, major theories that are giving rise to urban myths such as UFOs. In fact, like, for example, one of the theories was with the Majestic documents. For those of you that don't know what those are a list of so-called hidden CIA documents that were only being released now, that there are simply not enough to justify the sheer amount of volume of information that should be out there regarding extraterrestrials. For example, right, Jeff?
Yeah, that's the gist of it. I look at the Majestic documents kind of from the perspective of a detective. If someone brought these to me and said, hey, look, I got this letter, you know, supposedly signed by Harry Truman that has to deal with UFOs.
Yes.
The question is, you know, really, how do you approach something like that? Do you look at it logically? You can look at it, forensically. There's a lots of different ways to look at it. And my issue with the UFO community is that there's a need to believe, and it's so strong that a lot of people will accept these things without really doing the hard work of determining whether it's true. Now, that being said, there are those out there who are supposedly experts who authenticate these things. But for every expert who's willing to authenticate it, you can find five who will tell you it's bogus. So you're right back to square one again. And that's been really the problem with a lot of the UFO conspiracy stuff all along, is that for everybody you can find that will support it, you can find five people who will debunk it, and then you really don't know what's going on out there.
And I appreciate that, because I really want to believe, God knows, we really want them to come in and fix things, don't we?
Absolutely. See if they can do as big a worse a job than we're doing, I suppose.
No, you'd think not. Unless they're already involved, Jeff, then we're in trouble.
Well, I think they're smart enough to keep their hands off of things and just say, hey, look, I'm not going to get involved with that mess. Just like neighbors who are fighting. You don't want to go over there and get involved in there. And they're squabble.
I know. And so, like, so this is interesting. So what this does indicate to me, and what this does illustrate, is your journey, specifically to take just certain ideas which is mythical creatures, ancient civilizations, UFOs, for example, and learn through the processes of these or your research what exactly they were. And then this brought you back around to sort of having decided to study certain things like the Sasquatch, or sorry, that's the Canadian version, the Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Was that some sort of a side pet project of yours, mind the pun, for your research, or how did that link into your ultimate goal, which was to research in reincarnation?
Well, I suppose of all the different phenomena out there, when I was growing up, I thought the Bigfoot was the one that was most intriguing to me. It was kind of like everybody's boogeyman. And, I remember as a kid seeing this documentary called The Legend of Boggy Creek. And I remember that just scared the heck out of me. And I've been fascinated with this possibility ever since. And I kind of kept tabs on it over the years. And, in fact, it was my first published article was on Bigfoot, the Patterson film. Which really got me started on my writing career. So it's interesting how God used an interest of mine from when I was just a kid and basically used it as the instrument to get me involved in writing full-time and moving into all of these other books.
So I'm looking at this here, and that would have been your first, your published novels. Also, I wanted to point out to our readers here that Jeff is now writing out his characters that he has researched. So, in other words, he's gotten to know his research so well that he's turning them into stories, which he has samples on his pages. It's very beautifully written, and the only way I could point it out was the word chthonic, which is otherworldly or underworldly. Definitely some very, very dark imagery there. And this brings me into, also, I noticed in your private writing, in your novel writing, that you still have a very a strong aptitude towards going back into a sort of a not a military, but a kind of a very strong position or background in which you've always got the good guy and the bad guy, even if it's the creatures, right? Usually I see that through, you know, your amazing story, the Serpent Gigante, sorry, I'm just trying to say that properly. It's such a beautiful title for a book that you have. I mean, I could almost see these being developed into movies. Wonderfully written. Now, this is kind of an expression, I guess, of all the research that you've done over time. So what I wanted to do today was also really focus on, it brought you to this point that you've researched all this material. You want to say something about how this came about. And Jeff, I want you to please give us a little bit of background on where you were brought up and also what you're doing now. I mean, I see you've been through a very, very varied history with your, he's an illustrator as well, as having illustrated and worked in the military. Worked for the military, and has been a writer, a prolific writer. So tell us a bit about yourself, Jeff. I know that not all the way back, but for sure, go into this, because then we're going to go into your past lives. Because it's very interesting life. How it links up to your current life.
Okay, well, you know, the 5-cent biography is I was a veteran of the Navy. I was in the Navy right out of high school. After that, I went into art school, became a graphic designer. I've been doing that pretty much full time for the rest, since the mid '80s. Background is essentially I was born a Catholic, kind of left the church, became born again when I was 21 years old. Was very active in the evangelical churches for a good 20 years. Eventually, began to question some elements of my faith. Began to search other faith structures. And see if I could find some answers there. That led me into reincarnation, which I found to be something that answered a lot of questions for me. And from there, it sort of propelled me into just looking at the world in a different way, in a much more expansive way. That has brought me basically to today, where about 5, 6, 7 years ago, I started writing these books on different subjects of the paranormal, kind of looking at them from an objective view. And then that has led me ultimately into novel writing. So taking a lot of these creatures that I've read about, even if I haven't written about them before, and using them as characters in novels. I think it's a much more entertaining way to teach people about the world out there. I decided to come up with a different kind of twist on it. You know, I'm a happily married man, and I thought it would be kind of neat to have the characters in my trilogy be a husband and wife, scientists, who go off looking for these different creatures and inevitably finding them. That way you have not only the interesting creatures that they come up with, but also their interaction, how they work with each other, how they interact and play off each other's strengths and weaknesses to get out of the fixes they find themselves in. And I think that's what makes my books unique, is it's they're not just about finding a monster and defeating it, but it's also about how they will sacrifice for each other and how their love comes through when they're in these situations together, and how they just kind of find ways to get out of it. And the one of the characters in these books is a strong Christian herself. So, and then her husband is more of an agnostic. So you got that dynamic at play too. How does her faith, affect the fact that she's a scientist and how she looks at these creatures?
So Jeff, I try to handle a lot of different things. Would your wife mind if we asked what background she were from? That's from.
Pardon again?
Your wife, what background is she from?
My wife?
My
wife is, she's been strong in the church all of her life, and she's been very supportive of my looking at different things, and she's gone in this journey with me. So I think that a lot of my experiences with her in our lives, how we work together, has translated into these books. So that's kind of the way I wanted to do it. I just thought it'd be a nice way to do it, to tell stories that are entertaining and still tell us a message beyond just the action itself.
Yeah, that's correct. And so one of the things, so do tell me, now you were Catholic and then you took up, you actually went into evangelism. And for the layman who doesn't understand the process of how it is to be snapped up into a spiritual endeavor, could you explain to us how you were not, how you were led into this particular path and then how you left? And just give us a little background of that, because we're always curious about people that have such, we're afraid of and in awe of people that have so much faith. Right.
Well, I don't know where faith comes from. I don't know why one person seems to be interested in faith and another person isn't. I don't know if that's a genetic thing or what it is. But I remember ever since I was very young of always being aware of God and interested in God. I didn't really, I was too young to have any kind of an articulated faith, but I was familiar with some of the Bible stories through the Catholic Church and through my catechism classes. And so when I was a young man, I was very curious about these things, and I had met a number of people who were strong Christians who answered a lot of my questions. And one day I just said, well, this seems to be, where I belong. And so I became a Christian. I became, trying to make myself as knowledgeable a Christian as I could by, I read the Bible. I read a lot of religious literature over the next few years, tried to make myself at least as knowledgeable as I could for not having any formal theological training. And I really enjoyed those years as a Christian. I think that I learned a lot about myself, about other people, but there was also a discontent. I always was more or less afraid of God. I was always trying to please God, do things that I thought would make him happy. And that always sort of tainted that relationship. And I also had issues with things like hell. How could a good God send anybody to hell? I had issues with the second coming. They were always talking about Jesus' coming and just never showed up, and I thought, well, somebody's got something wrong here. And because of that, I began to look at other ideas. And so one day I just felt like I had gotten as far as I could with Christianity. And if I was going to evolve spiritually any further, I didn't have to abandon it, but I had to move on to the next set of lessons, if you will. And that's
how
I sort of
writing?
Leave it. Pardon?
which led you on to research for your writing, or how long did this evolution take for you? I mean, I see here that you started writing in 2002.
Right. I had been playing around with writing over the years. Some of these manuscripts that are being published now are written, 15, 20 years ago. So I was at the time I was a Christian. I was also looking at doing some writing. I did some Christian based writing, but I was basically just learning how to write. You have to write a lot of stuff before you're ready to actually publish something. Mm-hmm. And so I was going through all that, but the writing was kind of a natural outgrowth of my creative energies. I was working for many years as an illustrator and a graphic designer, and that was, one outlet, but it wasn't the fullest expression of how I wanted to do things. I wanted to really paint pictures with words more so than with, pigment and pencil. And so that was a natural transition to go from artist to writer. And it was kind of, I felt like I had been led there over a long period of time, 15, 20, 25 years, to finally get to the point where I had enough life experience and had read enough that I could reasonably write and be saleable. And so it's been a tremendous adventure ever since, just putting words to paper and enjoying when people write me and say, I really liked your book, I really got something out of it, it answered some questions for me, and that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Sure does. And now, it must, and that is something I want to experience one day too, Jeff. And Jeff, I wanted to ask you, so we're going into, I have a lot of questions here, I actually have some prepared for you, because many of us are familiar with the concept of reincarnation, usually the Buddhist or the Hindu version of reincarnation. And I was looking over some of your research and descriptions in some of your writings, and I was impressed to see you actually sort of pretty much understanding or trying to understand and also refute some of the Christian versions of reincarnation. In other words, there are Christians, for those of you that don't know this, but there are certain sects of Christianity and I believe of Islam as well that will be interested in ideas or notions of reincarnation. Yet you took some of these ideas and you took them apart. Why is that?
Well, I'm of the opinion that people hold a small amount of the truth and they tend to embellish and make up the parts that aren't complete. And I think this is true whether it's reincarnation or any religious belief system. You get an element of the truth and then the rest of it seems to be appendages that people have added over the years that tend to take away from the underlying message. And so with reincarnation, I wanted to examine it not only from an Eastern standpoint, but from a Western standpoint to see if there's any correlations, if there's any consistency between it, and where it's inconsistent. Where I can see things that don't make sense, and so I kind of did a little bit of both. I tried to think both East and West while I was writing on this subject to try to find the things in it that just kind of resonated with me and that had reinforced my own experiences. And the result was a couple of different books on the subject that laid out my case for how reincarnation works to the best of my understanding. I might be completely incorrect about a lot of it, but this is at least where I'm at with it, and see if anyone else, if it resonates with anyone else.
Do tell us a bit about the history of reincarnation, if you don't mind, Jeff.
Well, reincarnation is actually one of the oldest belief systems on Earth. It goes back into antiquity. It seems to almost have been a natural part of people's belief systems. So early man didn't really understand that when you died, there was nothing else. Atheism is a fairly modern invention, and people just assumed that you went on, and they would notice that, for example, a child would be born who had very many of the characteristics of an uncle or an elder that had passed. Mm-hmm. And they just naturally assumed that, okay, well, this child must be the reincarnation of this elder. And so these beliefs were embellished over the centuries. They became much larger, much more sophisticated. And then really about the time of Christ, when Christianity first came along about the 3rd or 4th century as a major religious force, they began challenging the whole notion of reincarnation because it was based off a very different perspective, was that you only live once, and then comes the judgment, whereas reincarnation is you live many, many times, and you go through many judgments. And so the two concepts were just not compatible. And so there's been this battle really ever since between East and West over whether or not the soul does reincarnate over and over again, or whether there is just a single experience.
I know. Wouldn't that make them kind of lazy? I mean, you'd think about a populace, right? The population. If they were told they could misbehave or allowed to misbehave a little in one life, and then they'll reap that. Most people psychologically will go, well, then I'll deal with that in my next life, right?
Well, you could make the case both ways. Mm-hmm. Because within Christianity, of course, you can do all sorts of nasty things, and if you're contrite and, you know, repent, well, you're not held accountable for it. Mm-hmm. So you can be a nasty person all your life, except on your deathbed, if you genuinely embrace Christ, all of that goes away. So there's also Christians who say, well, look, I'm going to deal with it on my deathbed. I'll just do what I want to do now, and deal with it later. So you see that mindset in both East and Western religions. Yes, there are people in Eastern religions who say, I'm not going to worry about it. In this lifetime, I'll deal with the next lifetime. But there's also people who are very trapped in being very careful about everything they do because they don't want to deal with it in the next lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, they realize it's going to be much worse. And if you're already born in poverty and you're thinking, my goodness, I'm going to come back even worse shape next time to pay for all these crimes, then you're going to try to behave yourself. But it's human nature to try to want to get away with things, if you will. And both Eastern and Western faiths give you that opportunity if that's your mindset, but that's a very simplistic approach to these ideas.
You know, you were saying that I was reading through some of your history. Now, for those of you that haven't had a chance to look at his history, Jeff has regressed into his past life. Now, one of the things he does discuss in his site and in his book is that he really was very particular about researching some of these past life regressionists, correct? And also the psychology behind it. So what I liked about his work was the way he was able to describe certain questions that we have, as in, if you're being interviewed by a past life regressionist, surely they're just going to make sure that you believe in your past life, right? And one of the things is that I would say that is probably, from my perspective, if I may bring in an analogy, not true, because then you would think that I, as a psychic, will believe everything that is either spun out to me by other psychics or everything that I even say myself, so that I would want to cross-reference everything. In fact, if anything, being a psychic has been made me extremely skeptical towards the spiritual industry, Jeff. And it makes me a lot more discerning. And I think that's partly what you have to understand when you listen to or read some of his work, is that he's done a very thorough job of trying to explain those questions that we have. So in other words, suggestibility, if one is suggestive. Explain that, Jeff, to us, please.
Right. One of the biggest criticisms of reincarnation is that the therapist who's putting you under can just suggest different ideas to you, and you pick up on them. And in an attempt to sort of appease the therapist, you will play along or make up things that you think the therapist wants to hear. And mm-hmm. You know, there are also people who have very fantasy-prone personalities. They really do imagine that they are Napoleon or somebody like that. And so reincarnation can sort of reinforce those fantasies. So when you're really dealing with reincarnation, you have to be aware of the human propensity to want to believe in, you know, unusual or strange things. That being said, if you are aware of that going into it, then and you can, you know, explain away some things using that explanation, what you're left with is the things that can't be explained so easily. you know, the past life memories that are verifiable, or the past life memories in children as young as 3 or 4 years old, who would not be prone to making up stuff as complex as the lives they describe. So you can always find explanations for a lot of it, but I try to get it down to that part of these experiences that you can't explain scientifically or psychologically, and that's really where the truth lies in those areas.
Right, and you were saying, like, for example, some of the cases that were interviewed, like, for example, I want to go into your story, but let's say you take your cousins or your nephews, your niece, your nephew, you were saying in your writing, that they had fairly ordinary, unremarkable past lives, something that you would probably not really attribute to anything much special under regression. And I, for one, have come across many a person. I can't tell you how many I've met a few Cleopatras and quite a few rock stars. You know, people are always reincarnating themselves into highly attractive people. And it's interesting to say to somebody, well, do you know that, for example, the countenance of Cleopatra, that nobody has a record of what she looks like? Mm-hmm. Yet everybody wants to adopt her countenance, right? Do you know that there's actually only one coin that exists with her actual profile? And she wasn't as attractive as she was made out to be.
Oh, well, you're that powerful, probably quite homely. You don't need to be.
Sorry?
You're that powerful, you don't need to be attractive. But,
you know, well, you're it's bringing up an interesting... But, you know, it's interesting to see people saying, well, I must have looked like that, you know? And
well,
it's like, really, you can do your history.
I think it's the idea that you have an exciting past life. You know, if your present life is kind of ordinary, there's people who are very attracted to this idea that I was much more interesting before. And that's a trap that you have to be careful about, because it's easy to be caught up in that. But in the therapists that I've talked to who do this for a living, who regress people, the majority of them say that most of the past lives that people recount are very ordinary. They're not famous people. They're just farmers or housewives, or they're soldiers or whatever. And they're not really that interesting of lives in and of themselves. And that's what I think makes them so interesting and so authentic, is the fact that if we do live past lives, the chances are that very few of those past lives were of somebody of note. We were probably just very ordinary people, just as we usually are in this life. And to me, that was one of the most compelling evidences for it.
And what is the most ordinary past life that you've heard of, for example?
Oh, well, like I was telling you with my niece, she was a printer at some little print shop in Pennsylvania.
That is fascinating. A printer, yes. I mean, that is rather obscure for her to know that, you know? And,
you know, and she was talking about different printing presses, different types of processes that they use to make the plates. And she doesn't know anything about this stuff in her normal life, but she seemed to have a kind of an understanding of how early 20th century printing worked. And even though it wasn't particularly exciting, I thought it was interesting that she was able to describe this process of printing that really would be something only someone who had worked actually on a press would really know.
So, like, when you have these characters that come through from the past, is there ever, this is a silly question, I know, but for the layman, is there ever an animal that comes through? You know, like oink oink or squawk or anything like that? Can we jump from species in our reincarnation?
Well, there are people who claim that, you know, they can remember being an animal, an eagle or a dinosaur or something like this. But my research has shown that this is very unusual, very rare. You don't see it very often. Most people recall lives lived as humans. And I think the reason for that is because an animal's limits in intellect and its ability to understand what's happening to it, it would really not have much to remember. You know, animals' lives are very straightforward. You know, they eat, they procreate, they die, and that's pretty much the extent of it. Whereas humans, we think about our place in the universe and why we're here and all these different things like that. And so it makes more sense that you would remember something that's closer to what you're aware of now than it would be that you would remember being a cow or a chicken or something like that.
That's true. They might not even have knowledge of how their language, how they would have expressed themselves. Jeff, one moment. We are going to go to a commercial break. We're going to take about 30 seconds out. My producer is going to put you through. Thank you. Sit back for just one moment, and we'll get on to our next questions.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at PsychicAccess.com.
Hi, Jeff. We're back. Okay, so we have you here on for our next questions. So we were discussing animal lives, and then I was going to take it into, of course, the very next thing, which was then I'm sure we would not remember we were plants. But the question here, too, is in a sense, what happens to plants? Do they evolve into animals, or do they even have, I know that we're not aware of them having a consciousness, but where do they fit into the reincarnation cycle, so to say?
Well, you got to remember that all life is emanates from the divine. Okay, so all life is essentially an aspect of God. And I believe that things like plants and very basic animals, I think they live in a sort of quasi-world of their own. And they're not really there to develop. They're just there to be plants or to be a butterfly or to be whatever it is they're supposed to be. And then they shed that form, and they move on to other experiences. Maybe there'll be some other kind of plant or some other kind of animal. Eventually, however, this energy coalesces into higher levels of awareness, what we would call consciousness. And eventually, these energies begin to come into a more human form, more conscious forms. And that's where the real spiritual evolution takes place, is once you reach that point. And so, to answer your question, you know, plants and animals really don't reincarnate per se, in the respect that they would have memories of being something in the past or, you know, of experiences in their past life. But that's not to say that they may not have an influence on our conscious incarnations. For example, you know, people have a very strong affinity a lot of times with animals, horses or dogs and cats and things. I mean, I have three dogs of my own I think are almost like our children. And I wonder if that affinity that we feel for animals and things like that or the beauty of plants isn't a part of our memory of having been in that world many, 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 many thousands and thousands of years ago.
That's very possible. And, you know, this is one of the things we wanted to get into. So Jeff's background, his past life regression was, what, tell us about that, Jeff. It's actually quite an interesting story.
Well, when I was a teenager, I was extraordinarily fascinated with World War II. I don't know why, because I didn't come out of a military family. I was living on a farm in Minnesota, grew up in the country. But I was fascinated with World War II. I was interested in Germany. And it seemed like that was my preoccupation, and I never understood why. You know, cause it made me very different from most people. I wasn't into, you know, music. I wasn't into all this stuff my fellow students were into. I was just into military history. And then many years later, when I began to study reincarnation, and I was regressed, it turns out that I actually had been a soldier. during the Second World War in Germany. And I was killed in the fighting in Russia very early on in that war. And that explained to me a lot of my affinities that I had for German, things German, even down to the footwear I used to wear. I used to wear these black Wellington boots. That was the only footwear I had. I didn't have tennis shoes. I didn't have anything else but these black Wellingtons. And if you think about it, a black Wellington boot is very close to the jack boots that the German soldiers wore. I mean, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's probably the closest equivalent you could find would be the jack boots. And so it was just amazing to me how that life dictated so much of my adolescence and my affinities and my fascinations for things. And then when I was able to go into that regression, I was able to come up with a lot of information about who I was back then, where I came from, where I grew up, how I became into the Army, and all these different things, which to me was really kind of reinforcing what I had already felt deep inside me, and really gave me an insight into how the whole process works.
This is, so would you say you have more of an affinity, you talk about the Germans, with German culture, or did you have to relearn that from this point?
Well, what happened was, in high school, I took German. That was one of the languages offered, and that was the only one I was interested in taking. I'm not particularly good at it, but I was interested in that culture. I've never been to Germany. I still haven't been to Germany.
Oh, you must come. My background is German. We would love to have you there.
Well, okay, I'll come over there. But
okay.
One of these days,
we'll
who knows? Maybe I'll get on out there. But
you bet.
It just seemed to be just a natural attraction to me. That being said, as I got older, I was able to move past that and develop other interests and other affinities and other things in other areas. And by the time I was in my 30s or 40s, you know, this was no longer as big an issue in my life as it had been when I was an adolescent. And that's good, actually, because you don't want to just relive an old incarnation under a new name. You want to move on to new experiences. But you do have to be aware that what happened to you in past lives does seem to impact what happens to you to some degree in this life. And I'm not talking karma. I'm talking about just the choices you make, the things you like, the things you dislike. I don't know if you've ever met people that you just immediately took a liking to or took an immediate dislike to. These are often echoes from a past life, either positive or negative. And it just made more sense to me of why I look at the world the way I do once I understood this.
So one of our my co-hosts is asking about your age, and I think what the link-up is saying that, you know, you were probably in your embryonic form transitioning from the World War II, or are you talking about World War I, but I believe you're talking about World War II, mm-hmm. into your current life. And so how long would you have stayed? Do people go into storage for extended amounts of time? And then that brings us me to my one segue in this study that you made. And if anybody gets a chance to please read his articles on ghost personalities, they are phenomenal. He's written a book on ghosts, and he was actually able to typify the psychological breakdown of departed spirits, which I had a really good chuckle at because it's really the way I've been trying to describe it. You know, the difference between orbs, family spirits, pet spirits or animals. We're talking about traditional hauntings, inanimate spirits. So he did a fair amount of research and categorization of spirits. So we wanted to ask you, would you have been put into storage or have been put into a form? Would you have haunted Russia?
All right. Well, it's kind of a complex system. The more I research it, the more complexity I see in this whole process. You've got to understand that the personality is something we take on when we come into the flesh. Just like we take on a body, we also take on a personality. It's shaped by our experiences, our background, our upbringing, what kind of parenting we had, and all those things go into shaping that. And then as we grow older, we begin to think of our personality as who we are. Although it's really not who we are, we're actually a soul being. and we have a personality that exists higher and above what our current personality is. So the question is, what happens when you die? Well, obviously the body is shed, but also the personality lingers for a time. And this is what becomes the ghost. And the soul itself returns to its source, to the spiritual realm, and continues to reincarnate. But that personality may linger for anywhere from a few weeks to months to decades in some cases.
So for those of us that need clarification, the ghost is actually like a replica of your old soul. It might only be literally the electro-like handprint, but yet it can, in certain environments, linger and, you know, harass a susceptible person. But it's good to know that in between, we don't have any kind of, that we're not stuck having to, you know, sit with our neighbors or haunt our place of death. I mean, that's a very comforting thought, you know? For those of us that actually do believe in life after death, the ones of us that wonder why we get stuck in between, it's really comforting to hear it's not the real soul.
Right. The soul itself is immortal and impervious. It goes on forever. But those personalities are temporary things that we inhabit. And sometimes if you die with unfinished business or perhaps with a lot of rage, a lot of negative energy in your life, things like that, these things can keep you, kind of, that soul sort of stuck here. Instead of being absorbed back into the spiritual realm, it actually lingers, kind of with one foot in the spirit and one foot in the physical realm. And that can be, I think, a very unpleasant experience for some people. But it's a temporary experience, and it's something that maybe they need to go through before they're ready to move on to the next spiritual lesson. So, in other words, it's such a series of complexities involved here. It's hard to say, okay, when you die, you do A, B, and C, and then you do this. I think there's a lot of different options that we face and a lot of different directions that we can move when we shed this fleshly husk of ours and move on. And
beautiful
being a
word,
ghost
yeah.
is one of them, and reincarnating is another one.
Now, this is the weirdest question I'm ever going to put towards you. Maybe you can just stay with me here. I was reading up on, you know, there's certain aspects of your writing. Like, there was a quote in your biblical research about, we're talking about people misinterpreting Christ having come back to life and then being reborn and them having taken that as a sign, as reincarnation. And my point was more in the sense of this. So, like, if you die here and you, for some reason, because a lot of people are working on life extension, whether it's probably artificial, okay? That would be truly a terror, but I know that many of us are expecting that through modern science. So what happens if you suddenly you die for 45 minutes, let's say, and they bring you back to life? Could it be possible that you ever get reincarnated and then come back into your old body?
Actually, that may be one option. You may be have an opportunity to come back into the flesh and go down a different road. You know, you could make completely different decisions. So I think that you have an option to come in as another person, another gender, another race, and experience things from that perspective, or do your life over again, but just go down a different path than you went on this one. And
explore. So you get a second chance, maybe. In a way.
It's kind of like a second chance, but of course you don't remember the other road you went down. So it's not really like redoing it. It's like moving down an entirely different road. I mean, have you ever wondered what your life would be like if you had had a different set of parents than you did? Or if you were born in another place and time than you were? Your life would probably be very different. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that you may have that option of having a different experience within the context of the same incarnation. Who knows? You may be able to have multiple incarnations at the same time, because they're all being generated by the same parent's soul.
So
they're more like
that.
Siblings. Pardon?
Jeff, one of my clients once tried to ask me when her cat had passed, why an infinite number of cats came to visit her. I just thought I'd relay to you that story. She was very confused at seeing a million of her little kitten come back to her. That made me feel, and it would have probably been too daunting for her to imagine this, that her cat had actually been replicated into maybe a million different other lives. What is beyond? Like, when we have ascended, our course, our action at this point, do we just go into one being, or could we not just somehow become an intelligent multi-being? What happens, or do we become the Godhead?
Well, I believe that we become incorporated back into the Godhead. I think that we are like cells in God's body, and we are God's mechanisms that he uses to, or she, whichever your preference is, to experience itself. In other words, as long as God is spirit, he or she can not really experience anything. They can conceptualize everything, can understand everything, but can't experience. In other words, how does God experience hunger or pain or depression or any of those things?
Maybe
he can only
through
do
us.
It conceptually. So he has to come into the flesh, or she, in through us. And we are the ones who feel these things. We have these experiences. And through those, God gets a chance to experience itself. So that when we do die, we are actually incorporated back into the greater Godhood, if you will. We become aware of God on that level. Now God's not just some, you know, abstract concept out there. We're actually part of that Godhead now. We have that clarity, that understanding that we don't have on this planet. And then we decide, what do we want to do next? What other experiences God want to have through us? And then we make a decision. Do we want to come back into the flesh? Do we want to go to another realm of existence, a different dimension entirely?
That's
I think
right.
that the choices are remarkable.
So are we stuck on Earth if we want to reincarnate from Earth? Do we all have earthly memories? Does that mean once we've... can we leave this planet, do you think?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. However, think of Earth as a particular college. You know, if you are going to college and every semester you change colleges, it becomes very difficult to keep a continuity in your education and your learning. So I think that we often choose to come back to Earth because this is a particular venue that we find comfortable and that
venue.
We need to sort of see all the way through. And if we start jumping from planet to planet, then we kind of start from scratch again with a whole new venue, and that can be maybe a little detrimental to our growth. Who knows?
The question I wanted to ask you, and that's one that we all ask, why are we conscious now?
Well, we can't be unconscious because we are an emanation of the divine, and as long as God is alive, God is consciousness, and we are that aspect of him. We are conscious of that. The problem is that we tend to forget that, or we try to hide from it or bury it under all of the little things we do and say every day. And that's why when people become aware of the fact that they are a part of God, it changes their lives because suddenly they become conscious in the way God is. And it changes everything about their lives and how they look at it and how they live it if they have really, truly come to that understanding.
So would you say that one is more conscious in this life? Am I talking to some people that are unconscious, even if they pretend they are?
Well,
is it a ruse?
people have different levels of consciousness. Some people are still in a fairly primordial state. They're very into the moment, into the flesh, into the pleasures of the flesh, whatever it is that's going on at that moment. And they're not looking beyond that. And then other people seem to be able to rise above that, and they have that kind of overwhelming awareness.
So in a way, when you think you're conscious, you are.
Well, you know, the farther you realize you have to go, the more conscious you are. It's kind of one of those things like you're not really an adult until you realize how childish you are.
That's true.
It seems like a contradiction. And so the more spiritually conscious you become, the farther you realize you need to go yet.
Well, Yeah, that is the greatest question I've had on my mind, and it just seems the further one goes on in life, the more conscious one becomes. And you know, we would love an end to that. And that before I have to, unfortunately, we have to probably say our goodbyes. But I wanted to ask you, for those of us that don't want to come back, we just don't wanna. Can we go to bed for a bit? Can we like decide to wake up in a million years? What
Absolutely.
Do you think that one can do, or does one have to go back to school?
No, no. I think that a person can do whatever they feel led to do. The question is, once you realize that living life is the only game in town, you're going to be willing to come back to it. However, nothing is ever forced upon you. I think the one thing God has given us is free will, and that's the free will to come back, or the free will not to come back if we don't want to, or to come into some other experience that has nothing to do with what we've had up to now.
Goodness, so that is such a relief, Jeff, for all of us out there that are going to have like sighs of relief and, you know, a much better night's sleep, is that there is, you know, that there is a free will even to how one spends one's afterlife. It's mm-hmm. very, very enlightening. I really did enjoy our chat. We might be disconnected for now. I'm going to have to introduce our next week's guest. But Jeff, thank you so much. And for those of you that want to review his work, it's his work is on ourcuriousworld.com. He has published through Llewellyn, which is a very large mystic book publisher. They usually only take on the best writers. I want to tell you, he is of a very high caliber. The book that we were talking about today was The Case for Reincarnation. And we have other, you know, his novels are listed on there, including his new book called The Nightman, which is also a Sasquatch mystery. So...
Well, Carmen, I really had a great time. I appreciate you having on, and I look forward to hearing from any of your readers through my website.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too, dear. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, thank you very much for listening into that portion of our program. What we're looking at right now is to stay tuned for your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics after the break. So we'll be announcing the call-in number. Make sure to have your pen and paper ready, okay? And you must also be sure to visit our psychic blogger site to learn about everything from the paranormal to all the workings of psychic development and also how we work as psychics. So the call-in number for our readings at the end of the show is 724-444-4851.
Please enter the call ID.
And this is
by
where any
key.
Of you can call in for your free psychic reading, or if you like, some of your questions on reincarnation as well. Now, we have a program for next week, so we'd like to be able to discuss that next show. I believe that it's with Steve. Is that correct?
Yes, we've got a really interesting show. Actually, looking back at 2012 in retrospect, we've got a wonderful guest, Shannon Kring-Bouzet, who produced a documentary all about the Mayan prophecies and the Mayan calendar. So it will be a really good one.
Welcome to TalkShoe.
Phenomenal. And so this will be a recap, basically, of the last year and what a year that was, you know?
Your entry is not valid, or
so
your call
is not scheduled
at this time.
So that brings us to the end of another wonderful program. Thank you, Doug.
6, 5,
you know,
4.
Doug, you don't ever hear about that guy, but
welcome
he's our boss,
please,
and he is the person,
ID,
the executive producer. He works
key.
Behind the scenes. Wave to Doug, guys. Thank you, Doug. Thank you for working behind the scene and keeping us on track.
Your entry
and
is not valid,
you for my co-presenters,
or your call is not scheduled
all
at this
of you, Maureen,
time.
Steve,
8, 1, 6, 5, 4.
For your show, for joining us.
Welcome
and
to TalkShoe.
In about another
please
30 seconds or so,
ID,
we're just going to take a break,
by the pound
and
key.
Then we're going to bring in our live callers. So thank you very much for your participation, guys, and I look forward to hearing from you. And also, if we have any other issues, unfortunately, we had a little bit of a problem with our chat room. So don't mind that, but we're just going to go on to our next part of the show. Now, for those of you that want anything about reincarnation, again, feel free to just put that through. and see if any of us here can discuss that. Stephen and Steve will also, and Maureen will also have a lot of ideas. Maureen, what do you think? Are you a reincarnationist?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I really appreciated the guest that you booked and interviewed because it's been years, and I think Steve maybe have been on maybe before that. I think you were Steve. Yeah, not Steve and Steve, because we've been here so long. We've been here like millions of years on this show, but I did a show. So whenever I bring something up, because we've been here so long, it's like I'm sure people have heard my thing again, but here it goes again. And maybe not for the new people, but it's a fascinating story. But many years ago, when I first started, I was running a restaurant, and how I got into my work, I think I brought up in the beginning, this is the work I must do. It wasn't like, you know, this is what my plan was, and I'm to be a psychic or do whatever. But what happened was I was running a restaurant, and I hired the waitresses, and I did all that. One of the waitresses was fascinated with the tarot and all that. Her name was Gypsy. She called herself Gypsy. She had a lovely woman friend who was very educated with master's degrees and something articulate, and she told me that she would like to introduce me to this woman because she was older, and although I was only 26 at the time, the woman was in her 30s, had 5 kids. She introduced me to her, and she said she does past life regression. I go, well, I'm not real good at doing that. I know I'm not because I don't mean not to be. You know, you can never hypnotize me on the stage. You know, when they point people out, they know they can do. But I wasn't one of them. So this woman, I end up connecting with her on
Welcome
the phone,
to talk
and
to.
She said she'd love to do a regression for ID, me, and, but she does them differently than anybody else. And this is 1987. So I go, okay, I can do a trade with you. I wasn't really a professional reader, but she goes, no, how about you just make me dinner because I hear you're a really good cook, and I'll bring my 5 children and husband. I go, okay. They come over, and we have dinner. They're lovely people. We say goodnight. A week later, I get this cassette tape in the mail from her, and I was blown away by what this thing was. It was about my past life. It wasn't your traditional ones where you sit back and they regress you. But this
your
woman knew nothing
not
about
valid,
me except I ran a restaurant.
And
I knew the girl
time.
I hired as a waitress that was in, and she said I was interested in tarot, whatever. It's to this day, I still listen to this after all these years. I listen to this when I first, and he was talking about how people love, you know, well, I was Cleopatra.
Welcome
I was
to talk
this, you know, holier
Please
than thou.
Please enter
person.
The call ID,
you hear about all,
followed by the
yeah,
pound
I've heard
key.
Them all too. But the thing
how
of it is.
How many Cleopatras have you met?
No.
Met two.
No, I can't even count.
Your entry is not valid, or your call
you know,
is not
I mean, Cleopatra, but you know, there's also
Eight,
there's
one,
some
six,
fabulous
five,
story.
Four.
No offense to anybody.
Welcome
I'm sure
to
that
to.
I'm not I'm saying
Please
well,
enter
Theo,
the call ID,
there,
followed
too,
by the pound key.
Yeah, but really, this reincarnation to me is a serious situation where I feel it's a really great opportunity if you embrace it.
Your entry
now, like
is not
I said,
valid,
what
or
she
your
did with me was very unusual.
Time.
She used
Eight,
a,
one, six,
music.
Five,
a,
four.
A, I forget the name.
Welcome
and she also did,
to.
And this is during
Please
the cassette
enter the call
days,
ID,
days, you know, recording
followed
them.
By the pound
she
key.
Also sent me all these different beautiful music, just put me in some state of meditation, but you could hear it in the background. It's called Rose something. It's just beautiful. But anyway, this is her way. Like I said, she met me once. Like I said, she didn't know who I was. She would go into like this state and focus on me, and she just started. You could hear her voice, and she was so lovely. The way she was so real and authentic. Because
enter
so I put
pin,
this thing in, thinking, okay, this will be
key.
Fun, right?
If
whatever.
You were not
I put this tape in, and I'm listening to it. And at the end, I was blown away. Part of me was fearful. I was crying through most of it. It was scary. It wasn't that she meant to do it like that, but she also, anything that was real, not real positive, she brought some very enlightening observation to it to help me understand why or what she was seeing, perhaps to help me in this life now. And for example, it starts out and it made so much, she goes, I see you in way back in just time in Japan, and you can hear this really interesting sound music and very low in the background. She goes, and I see you people coming from miles and miles just to be in your presence of silence. Now we all know, everybody, that I'm not very silent. I talk fast. And I go and I run around circles like a you know, people that know me People get to know me, but even physically, if you guys have never seen me, I run around crazy, and I've always been trying to prove myself to my family. I picked the family. I think I jumped into the wrong one when it was time to jump. I think that it was supposed to be like that one, that it was going to be a challenge. I feel that there's lessons there, but when she started talking about, this is a time people come just to be in your presence, and they bring us a sense of peace. And then she started going on about, but I see all these other lives where you're doing destructive things. You're like a wizard doing destructive things that aren't healthy and not right. And I see you as a sea urchin, someone that was poor. She goes on, and then she says, and I'm listening to this open-minded, but what she goes, but what I'm seeing in this lifetime, Maureen, if you've got to be careful, your health is in serious, and I'm 26. She goes, well, you keep running in circles. You run like someone told me the other day, like a hamster. I go running. It was Julie in the chat room. Thank you, Julie. It was right. I'm like a hamster going round and round and round. But I was always trying to prove myself at a very young age to my family. There's nothing wrong with me, because I was raised Catholic and I was raised all this, but there was nothing wrong with me. In fact, I was just different, but no one wanted to, my family wasn't the right family to, you know, embrace that. So when she was saying, if you keep wanting to show everybody these things on a silver platter, look at these, all these accomplishments, she goes, people wear blinders, they're not going to see it. It's okay, love them if you must. She really was lovely about the way she said, even if these people aren't healthy, there's a good reason why you're in the involved. And she's right. She didn't know me, but I did that ongoing through my life. I had numerous attempts of exiting out of life because of it, and numerous problems with self-medicating, everything. I was trying to just get the heck out of town or this world. She was so right. And then she goes, and then she went to my past life, and it was not pretty, but it all made so much sense. And like I said, I still listen to it to this day, and Sonic cassette tape. I re-recorded it. It was so old, and it
really
blew me away.
Tape, eh?
Yeah, I do. I still have my own cassette. Yes,
and because I
took the original.
Failure.
But I'll tell you something. When I listen to it, and I do at this age, it helps me understand a lot of things when I start going about what I'm supposed to get. And it brought up a lot of different things. But she also said there was a man at this time. But he was here. It was during the slave days. It wasn't pretty. This stuff was not pretty at all. It was not pretty. But he said something when you rarely hear like his son. His daughter being connected to the printing room, being a printer, your guest was. It's not about those kind of things that are grandioso, but those normal things to other people, like for my life, these things were really important for me to hear, understand there's certain people that are in my life. And it was fantastic, and it blew me away, but it was not something that a lot of people think, oh, gosh, I had the most fantastic past life. Well, you know what?
That would be a nice thing to recollect.
Well, of course, but it would help you in this lifetime, now would it? I don't know.
What I thought was interesting, and I thought maybe someone else could pick this up, and we didn't even have enough time to really actually talk with Jeff about this, but one of his points that I found fascinating was that you could get reincarnated from one race into another, and how that would set you up.
That's right. That's how I would.
Racial problems or cultural problems.
And it would help you in this time period to
provide
you. Yes. If you could remember your past life, think about the survey. If we were able to really remember, which we are able to be able to more so. We would be able to be more caring towards people that were poor. We'd be more caring towards people instead of being
record
racist.
Record your message
we'd
at the tone. After recording, you may hang up or press pound.
You know,
for
the
more
interesting thing is about reincarnation,
page,
Maureen?
Press 2.
Not that I'm an expert on it, but I read
zero.
This concept the other day that there are different types of that we face different types of karma in our reincarnations, and that it's possible to face punishments from several lifetimes ago. Do you see that? In other words, our karmic punishment sometimes skips several lifetimes. Do you see? Now, isn't that an interesting concept that, you know, because I know a lot of people probably think someone like Adolf Hitler, for example, they'd say, okay, in his next lifetime, he's really going to be punished. But according to this concept, you know, good old Adolf could go a couple of lifetimes without facing any...
I know, you can just get reelected.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I love the idea of coming back over and over again, which probably proves that I'm far from enlightened.
No, maybe you just like Earth so much. Like Jeff was saying, it's a good venue. And I would imagine that it would be difficult to actually form another attachment with another celestial body or another solar system, if that were the case. Besides, we have infinite number of lives, right? So why wouldn't you keep coming back? I think that one can keep trying. Stephen, you know, we have two Steves here. For you guys that don't know, we just heard from Stephen. And Steve, what would you say? Are you a reincarnationist? Because now we've got two astrologers here. These people will tend to look back in terms of things of eons and eons of time, in terms of the star maps, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, the natal chart will give a portrait of where you've come spiritually and also where you're going. It'll tell you what spiritual tasks and challenges you have to face in this lifetime, what sorts of karma and punishments you have to face in this lifetime. And these messages are very specifically delineated in a person's natal chart. And it's a great place to start if you're interested in some sort of past life regression, for sure.
Surely it is. Now, for most of us that aren't familiar with past life regression, another thing is to look back on historically. They were the Greeks. Pythagoras, for one, was very interested in that. We go back even further. I believe the first earliest recording would have been about 1500 BC of any kind of that kind of way of thinking. Which, Steve Frampton, would that be predating astrology? How old is astrology?
Well, it's a good question. The answer is there is no answer. We don't know the true origins of astrology. We know that the ancients used astrology. So, for example, if you think of the birth of Christ and the Star of Bethlehem, that we know that there's a very rare astrological occurrence called an apulse. And around the alleged time of or date of birth of Christ, there was an apulse. And when we read about the three wise men, we know that they were wise because they were initiated into the ancient mysteries. So they were astrologers, amongst other things, and that's how they knew about the arrival of Christ, and they knew where he would be born because of astrocartography. So that's just an example of astrology and metaphysics being used a long time ago, but it goes far beyond that. And the answer is we just don't know the origins. We don't know where the knowledge came from, Carmen. Simple as that. What we do know is as far back as you can go in time, historically, it's there.
Well, we probably looked at the advents of Buddhism is about 4,000 years old. They're looking at 4,000 years in the very least, so the first pottery remnants you have of Asian culture going back that far. So I would imagine that if Asia had anything to do with it, they would have started working on on astrology as well, which makes me wonder, like, with the name of the person, could you in a way date back their date of birth? Is that possible?
Welcome to
what
talk
do you mean?
Like if you just say had the name, you know, Jesus, and you had a sort of a rough idea of where he was born, would you be able to establish his birth date?
And specifically in the case of Jesus?
Yeah, like if you didn't know him.
Enter your pin, followed by the pound key.
We know that there was an apple, so you could go back and identify the time of the apples.
That's right. That's what I'm getting from you, is that in a way you can pretty much figure out dates of birth or inception. And I'm just wondering in terms of heralding in all of our older, that is the people that we have had in our past that have probably been misdated to some extent when it comes to birth and death dates of people. Let's say in the case of reincarnation, trying to figure out, say, the date of departure and then the date of inception of, say, a new soul that would claim to be from that era. The only slight error that one would maybe have is historical translation, or perhaps, you know, the misinformation or the lack of collection of proper data. So in other words, in fact, Christmas could have been 4 months later or 5 months later, but we recollect it at the end of the year. So I just find it's like an interesting form of carbon dating, in so to say. Do you know what I mean, Stephen?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and are you also, in terms of your belief system, is there any kind of belief system that fits into astrology in terms of reincarnation that's truth? Or is that just sort of like something that one could be make up as one goes along or just adopt? It's got nothing to do with the astrological framework. Is there any evidence in astrology of reincarnation is what I'm asking?
There's evidence of what you bring into this lifetime with you. Mm-hmm. And there is evidence, therefore, of your dynamics in relationships and in the different areas or experiences of life. So you can see, for example, a person's dynamics or tendencies towards the male sex or the female sex, and the different areas of life, as I said. And you can look at karma. I don't particularly like using the word karma myself, but you can look at karma. And yes, there are ways that you can analyze the chart to get insight into experiences of consciousness prior to this lifetime.
Very interesting. And for those of you that want to know, like, yeah, you know, those of us that aren't comfortable with karma, that may not be the case. It may just be a very logical procession that one goes through life and experiences another and another, and that there's possibly no logical consequence except to better oneself for oneself. And that would be, you know, sort of the premise of being given another chance. Not necessarily as in the religious sense of sin and punishment, redemption or judgment, but just experience.
One thing you can do, Carmen, if anybody's interested in understanding what their life was like before this incarnation, they can look at the moon's nodes, the place where the moon crosses the ecliptic. It crosses in two spots, and there's the north node and the south node. The south node shows what you have to let go of, sort of the psychic residue that you've brought with you from your past life. So we could look at the zodiac position of the south node, for example, and judging the gender of the sign and its mode of operation, that'll give loads of data about how you operated in your past life.
Which brings up another point, Stephen. We didn't have enough time. This is such an in-depth topic to talk with Jeff about one of his major points. One was race, the other was gender. One of his theories was that some persons that had maybe gendered identity issues or perhaps were curious about their sexuality had perhaps been a different genders in their past lives, which is interesting.
That is interesting, and that would certainly explain a lot. You know, I think, you know, I'm a firm believer in Occam's razor, which says that the simplest solution or the simplest explanation is probably the correct one. And, you know, in the 80s and prior to that, you could actually start choosing your own gender. And so I think we have a cultural phenomenon, a cultural shift coupled with certainly some astrological factors that would lead to homosexuality, bisexuality, or gender confusion, you know, the plethora of gender-related issues that the modern era has, for sure.
That yes, and that would
well,
probably...
Well, they weren't, Stephen, they're not modern. They go back forevermore.
For a while.
You know, read about ancient Rome and, you know...
Good point,
issues around sexuality go back as far in time as possible. I'll tell you something that I was reading the other day that I found fascinating. I was talking with somebody who said you don't find homosexuality in the animal kingdom, and it's incorrect. And I did quite a bit of research, and there is
bonobos,
homosexuality.
Are pretty promiscuous. Is that right?
Well,
yeah.
Homosexuality is not
do.
About promiscuity, yeah. Carmen.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, lots of species engage in it. Penguins, I, you know, lots of. It's definitely not a human phenomenon.
We are coming to the part of our show here that is going to be for taking calls and questions. So, you know, we have a caller already, but we just wanted to call out the number for any of you that are trying to get through for your free reading. Again, it is 724-444-4851. And so I want to be able to introduce Stephen to your next caller. Stephen, you have a caller from New Jersey.
Thank you, Carmen. Hello, New Jersey. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name is Anand.
Anand?
Yep.
Okay.
A-N-A-N-D.
Well, how may I help you this evening, sir?
Hi. I had a question about relationships, actually. I was, you know, wondering about when I would maybe be getting into my next relationship.
Okay. When will he be getting into his next relationship within 6 months? Let's start with that. Okay. Will he be in a relationship within 6 months? And I'm seeing, in fact, that you will be in a relationship probably within the next 6 to 12 months. I'm seeing, now, when I say relationship, I mean that the preliminaries have already been dispensed with. In other words, that you've met the woman, or you know, you've met your partner already, that you've had a courtship period and all that good stuff. So when you factor in the courtship period, that's going to cut that timeline down considerably. You with me?
Okay. So I'm in kind of an interesting situation right here because there's a girl who I'm interested in who I haven't met yet particularly.
Yes. Yes, I really do believe I'm picking up on her in the sense that the Queen of Wands is the card in question, and this refers to a woman, a female, a mature female, obviously, and she would be very charismatic, sympathetic, understanding, etc. So what I'm picking up from her is that she might be a little bit difficult to talk to, quite frankly. Let's take another tack at this. Should he profess his desires to this lady? Let's go with that. Should he profess his desires to this lady? That's probably what you would like to know, right? Whether or not you should tell her how you feel about her. What will happen if he professes his desires to her? Because for sure, you are definitely on track to being in a committed relationship here fairly soon. Okay, should he profess his desires to her? Okay, 1 second, please. And yeah, you absolutely should. I don't see any significant impediments to letting her know that you're into her. In fact, what I do see is victory. Maybe a little apprehension, a little fear first, but you will be victorious. In other words, if you do let her know that you are into her, she will respond favorably. You'll be rewarded for your bravery, for putting yourself out there like that.
Okay. Can I ask, is she in a relationship right now with someone?
I don't see her as being involved with anyone right now. But just to be on the safe side, is she involved in a relationship? Because I don't want to give
around the time period.
Right. Is she single? Is she single? Definitely. Is she single? Bear with me. We're going to find out right now. Is she single? And the answer is she single. Well, it's looking like she isn't totally single, but I don't think she's going to be in a full-fledged commitment. She's not destined for the altar. In other words, the tarot would never have recommended you to talk to this lady if she were in a firmly established relationship. So, you know, I see her as dating. You know, dating.
Okay.
So you have a green light on this one, my friend.
Okay.
Okay.
Just real quick, can you tell me
if I give you initials, can we confirm that this is the same person we're talking about, or if it's a different person?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. What are the initials?
LSZ.
Is it LSZ? And that's S as in LSZ. Sam, right?
L as in lizard, S as in Sam, G as in God.
Okay. 1 second real fast, and we'll find out if this is the person. Okay, bear with me. Is this the person? Almost there. Is this the person? Okay. Let's see. And it's looking like no, it's going to be somebody else. And again, it's not going to be a huge, serious relationship, but they are dating semi-regularly. I don't think she's really all that into him, frankly. I don't think he'd be interrupting anything really.
The girl.
Sir?
These are the initials of the girl.
Yeah, well, the girl that you're talking about, I mean, as far as the lady that you're interested in, you can go ahead and that's the girl, okay? That's the one. Go ahead and talk to her. The one that you told me about, the one that you asked me about.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate you calling. Come visit us at psychicaccess.com, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Thank you for calling, Arend. And we are having a next call coming in from Massachusetts for Maureen. And we only have 6 minutes per call. So if you'd like to, just to make it easier for you, just please ask one important question, and then that gives us a lot of time to go into what you need to know. Massachusetts.
Hello. Hello, Massachusetts. This is Maureen. Hello. Hello. I know you're there.
It's just a lag.
Yes, wait for it. There it comes. We like masses. I can't even pronounce Massachusetts. No, but that's because I'm from Atlantis and I know they're Mass. Oh, I'm going to wait there. Hello from Mass. I'll say Mass. Hello.
Hello?
If we don't.
There you are.
Well, that
hi.
Took a full minute. Yeah. Okay.
Hi. And may I have your name, please? Hello?
Hi. Hello? Can you hear me?
Hi. Your name's what?
Rose.
Oh, Rose is Maureen. I didn't know that was you. Massachusetts. You're called.
Can you
Rose,
hear me
hi.
Now? Oh, I couldn't hear. You couldn't hear me as I was talking.
No, I couldn't hear you, but I'm Massachusetts. I thought, oh, well, never mind. It's okay. Okay, Rose. How are you?
Good. Glad I got you. I wanted to know, I was with Glenn, and we were got together as friends, and a friend of his had contacted me who likes me, and Glenn offered to fix me up with him.
Uh-huh.
So I, yeah. So
okay.
I was wondering for him to
I'm
do
sorry,
that.
I'm sorry, Rose. Your question is, I'm sorry. I was doing some hemming and hawing because. So what's the question to this issue?
So the question to this is he just totally not interested that he offered to fix me up with his friends, or?
Or is it else? Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what I'm getting. And
okay.
It goes like this. It goes like this. My feeling is there's something very strange here, and it's not what it appears to be. I feel that. And because I do know I have read for Rose on psychicaccess.com and everything, so I know some things about, you know, your background with this. So you'll know what I'm talking about, hopefully, you know, nobody else, but that's okay. But I feel that this is something that, again, goes with his, I see him feeling very inadequate, very insecure. And I don't feel it has anything to do with him trying to pawn, I guess, here's the words I'm going to say, pawn you off on someone else so you'll leave him alone. It has nothing to do with that. And I know, well, I'm not sure, but perhaps in your mind, it may be that you might be feeling that way because obviously there must be more to the story than this because I don't see it to be, it's not going to happen for one. I don't see it happening. In fact, I see
it. I know it's not going to happen because I'm not going.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I feel that, you know, right now I see Glenn in a state of, You know, everybody's heard this before, the tower stuff, okay? The tower stuff, which shakes you up and then has you rebuild, which would actually be the best, and I always say it's a, you know, very difficult thing, but it would be the best thing. You know, Rose, I feel he's having some real issues, and, like, I do feel that he feels that you're already – the fact that he would say this, that means you're open to dating other people. In his mind, his perception is, okay, she's open to dating other people, or why would he even suggest such a thing? And this goes back to what I've spoken to you about before, because I don't feel that this is about that. It's just about what his perception is with you and how he sees you. And you are not going out with other people. I know that. I mean, that's not a psychic thing, but I know that, and you would agree, correct?
His friend contacted me. I didn't contact his friend, and I told him about it.
Okay, now, when he told you this, did he refer your number or anything like that? Because I don't see that going on.
No, his friend contacted me via Facebook, and I told him, you know, he contacted me to say hello, and he started talking to me. He goes, yeah, he likes you, and he goes, if you want, you know, I can fix the two of you up.
Okay, I see what he's doing. So his friend contacted you on Facebook, and it wasn't that Glenn said to my friend, go connect with her on Facebook. Is that correct? Did I hear that? Okay, correct. I get it. Oh, don't worry about it. I'm glad. I thought it was something else that he conjured up, and then he told his friend, hey, I know someone I want to set you up with. Don't worry about it. It's fine. But I'm glad you said no to him. You told no, Glenn. I'm not interested. That's okay. Rose, I still see some very positive things coming. I mean, the timing is coming up very soon where things are going to get much more easier between you two. And I think what you just told me, it's a lot easier on my nerves, because if it was the other way, I just, like I said, things aren't what they appear to be. I just don't feel that Glenn would be happy, and I'm glad, certainly happy that you did not say yes. Of course you wouldn't say yes to going out.
No.
But Glenn, you know, he's a gentleman. He had to ask you, to be fair. That was a nice thing. I would look at it as a positive thing. What if he didn't?
Okay.
What if? So, you know, I think it's good. It's okay. It's all okay. It's not so bad. It's good.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Nice hearing your voice,
okay.
Rose.
Okay,
thank
I'll
you. Talk to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello. So we have a caller from Montreal for Steve. Bienvenue, Montreal. Steve, you have your next caller.
Thank you. Good evening, Montreal. Who's calling?
Hi.
Hi there. What's your name?
My name is Shauna.
Hello, Shauna. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm well, thank you, Shauna. How can we help?
I was just calling about my love life. I'm just wondering what's going on with it.
Let's have a look. Love life. Well, the first thing I feel is that there is a person that you are interested in, either through work or some professional connection, because I feel in the past that there's a person that you're interested in, but it didn't seem to work out. And I see right now from the cards that you're not in a relationship, or it doesn't feel that you're in a relationship.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
What the sorry, Shauna?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah, and you know what I do see from the cards as well is that part of the reason for this is that you need to be really clear what it is you're looking for. So I feel from what my guides show me that your self-esteem is not quite as strong as it should be. You've got so much to offer, and you should be feeling confident. Your self-esteem should be higher, and that should enable you to be really clear about what you expect and what you're looking for in a relationship. So I feel as though almost you need to step back and allow your vision to become clearer, allow your self-esteem to improve, recognize how much you have to offer. And I feel that you will meet somebody. Again, I feel though that you'll meet your partner through work or career. Now, I don't feel that it happens this year. I feel that you're looking at next year, and I'm particularly drawn to the summer time next year. And I know often when we give readings to people that are interested in a relationship, they want it to be now, or they want it to be in a couple of months. But I honestly believe that the solution is for us to work on ourselves, Shayna, so that we feel so good about ourselves, we love ourselves so much that we are thinking highly of ourselves and being really clear what we expect in a relationship and in a partner, and being clear what we will not accept. So having a clear vision and high standards and clarity, that enables us to move forward and find the right relationship, but almost without looking. Because when we feel really good about ourselves, when our self-esteem is that high, we realize actually that we don't need a relationship or we don't need a partner. Mm-hmm. We would like to share ourselves and share our lives, but it's not a necessity. And when we get to that stage, we're really releasing that need, that attachment to the concept of being in a relationship and feeling good about ourselves. We enjoy life and it happens. And I feel if you do these things, that there's a great relationship for you next summer. And it does feel like the middle of summer. So I'm actually drawn, I would say, towards the end of July, beginning of August for you.
Okay, and do you know, like, what he looks like, or...?
I feel that he's... Well, my guides are saying it's... Let me see. Actually, I'm going to get into trouble. I feel like he's darker haired, actually. I don't feel like he's got black hair, but as soon as I went to say darker hair, my guide said, it doesn't matter. Tell her it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So, again, it's almost the message... Don't be concerned with it. Don't look. I remember, Shayna, being in a dream, and I have some really vivid dreams with guides, and I go sometimes I wake up and I can remember really clearly these lectures that I've listened to in my dreams on the astral plane. And I've probably said this before, but there was an old gentleman lecturing in this dream, and there were lots of people listening to the lecture, and a lady put her hand up and he said, yes, madam, you have a question, I'll answer it for you. And she said, how do you find something? He said, that's very easy, madam, don't ever look for it. So the point, and it's worked. This has worked for me. I've had this experience that when I really, really want something almost desperately, when I look too hard and make it everything, and it makes me depressed almost. The lack of it makes me depressed. That's not a good dynamic. That's lack of self-esteem and lack of trust in spirit and the universe or God, whichever term you want to use. But when we let go of all of that, we stop thinking about what they'll look like, whether they're dark-haired, fair, and we enjoy ourselves, enjoy life, love ourselves, know that we've got so much to offer, know that the life is abundant, that wonderful things happen, and we're not dependent upon the outcome, then life flows, then energy flows, then the law of attraction or mental alchemy really works, and we are surprised by wonderful things. So I feel strongly next summer, Shayna, but I also feel strongly that you don't need to focus on it. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Wish you lots of luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Shauna from Montreal. Now we have a caller for Carmen. Let's get Carmen in. Carmen? Yes, Carmen. Carmen, you have a caller from Massachusetts. Massachusetts, say hello to Carmen.
Hello?
Hello, Massachusetts. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Kathy.
Oh, hi, nice to meet you, Kathy. How are you tonight? Thanks for calling me. So here I am. I'm your reader for now. Mm-hmm. I'm an empath, so I can tell you a lot about how a person feels. That is my designation. And a bit of a prediction. So go ahead and ask me your question, please.
Well, my question has to do with someone who has passed. Would you be able to answer that?
From your past, absolutely.
Someone who has passed, a friend that has passed away.
Okay, I'm not necessarily a medium, but I can get probably some information. I am a medium, I just prefer not to do so because of the emotional nature. But okay. I will definitely try and get you some information from what I can do. Tell me the person's name, please.
His name is Ryan.
Okay. And if you have a question for Ryan, because I'm going to be using my cards to source this, I'm probably going to get, I may get more like, as we were explaining, and it's very topical that you would ask about this, is the handprint, the emotional energy of Ryan. What would you want to ask this energy?
We weren't really talking when he had passed, and his family kind of like blamed me for everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I just want to like make sure it's still okay.
Let me look. I'm sure it will be, because fortunately, when we pass on, we don't have as much of an emotional residue, and things become a lot more clear. So let's see here. Did you have it says here his father was a problem, possibly, in this relationship, that he may acknowledge that perhaps his father was driving this into a point of problems in terms of the passing. And when he passed, was it suddenly, Kathy?
Yeah, it was.
So were you able to attend the funeral?
His family told me I wasn't allowed to go, so I went before everyone went. The funeral director let me go and say goodbye before his family went.
Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. And that would have been the father's, but possibly a male in the family that was taking control. Ryan sees that as unjust, and possibly because of a legal nature. So in other words, he said that if it were up to him, he would not have closed off his life that way, because what I see here is with that, he understands that it was more than likely the legal aspects of it that shut him out as opposed to an emotional aspect. In other words, it was like the way family gains closure sometimes is by just closing the doors as quickly as possible. And it seems to me that was done under immense pressure, it says here. It says here, he left. Ryan left under immense pressure. I don't know how he passed, and don't give us the details. It's okay. But it seems to say here that it was a mistake and now has come to clarity regarding his the way he was kept from contacting you. So now this is an interesting point. Sometimes when I do mediumship crossover readings, I get little insights into how people are when they've passed over. And what he says is that, you know, for the most part, he was there when all his family was, and you weren't. And that didn't help him in his saying goodbye. So if anybody wants to exclude people, I understand if people want to exclude for family reasons and so forth, but try and keep that to a minimum, folks, when you do, because apparently this spirit seems to be saying that it didn't help him in his crossing over, that he would have appreciated everybody to have been united in the room.
Right.
You know, so in essence, it says here that he was kept from moving on. Now, his only comment to you, and this is where this gets really emotional, is that he felt rejected by you. And that he acknowledges that still as kind of a bit on an adult level, in that it's like, it's not all always holier than thou and I'm better when I've passed on. Now, he's actually saying that to some extent he still wants to talk to you, and it's not in a bad way, but he's maybe acknowledging that there was some small problem and that he still wishes to discuss that. Do you ever have dreams about him?
I have before, but I haven't in a while. I always ask him to come to me in my dreams, but hasn't happened lately.
Well, I'm thinking here that it's, if it has been soon, how long ago did he pass?
Actually, almost 2 years ago, but can I tell you something? A week before he passed, I had a dream that he had passed, and I called him, and I was like, I just want to make sure you're okay, and he was, like, really happy to hear from me, and then a week later, I got the call that he died.
At least, and it's amazing that you got to say goodbye. And I think that he felt there's a tremendous amount of pain that comes in both from your side of the reading and from his. And what it does say here is with kind of like you have here the Three of Pentacles. That to me is him trying to get detail. It says here about lost family. It says here with the Ten of Cups reversal. So what this is saying is that you've both been essentially cut off from each other. And, you know, the thing about that is at least it verifies that he misses you. And it also seems to indicate that he's still studying you. So, you know, as Jeff said, I don't know if you listened to our earlier part of the program, you know, he might actually, it could be his handprint, but 2 years maybe, and I believe in temporal shifts, that to some extent if one day we have a quantum theorist coming in and talk about time, we would be able to discuss how someone would be able to become suddenly conscious, come back, and reconvey a message like this, which is extreme disappointment, a lot of love, and having felt a little bit slighted by you because he loved you in your real life relationship, now coming back to comfort you and in your unhappiness. Now, I don't want to cut you off at this emotional point, but Kathy, thank you. I wonder if this has helped you a little. Sometimes they don't come through for a number of years. I know that with my pet dog, she didn't come through for many, many years. That's not abnormal, and that he's not snubbing you. It just may mean that you need to get better and get over this for a little. You take good care.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much. It really helped.
It did. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I try. So we have a few more callers to come through. We have one from Virginia, I believe. Is that for Maureen?
I believe that would be for me, actually.
I'm sorry about that. I was a little bit thrown off at the emotionality of the reading. Always can tend to throw one out.
Well, that's understandable.
Steve, go ahead.
Okay, well, hello, Virginia. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Steve. Speaking to Dee. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Hope you are as well.
I am calling to find out. I had two interviews last week, and one I got an email indicated that they hired someone. Mm-hmm. And I had two interviews this week, so calling to find out if you see any of these coming through. The one last week and the two that I've had this week so far.
Okay, so just to be clear, you're asking me about three interviews that you've had?
Correct, just the two? Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's just take a sort of a shotgun approach to this. Will she get hired by any of these jobs that she applied to? Will she get hired by any of these jobs that she applied to? 1 second, please. Well, I would have to say your chances are probably at a 50-50. And, you know, I hate to say that. I really do.
Oh, but, that's okay.
You know, the tarot is being extremely obtuse about this. It's saying, of course, that it's saying both yes and no, which is quite confusing, of course. So essentially what this means is that none of the prospective employers have made up their minds yet. Do you see? They're still evaluating.
Right.
Of course, two of them haven't even happened. So I do feel as if your chances with the two interviews that are coming up, I do feel as if your chances with them are better. So let's go with this. Will any of these two interviews that she has pending, will any of them offer her employment? Let's find that out real fast. For some reason, I think including the other one that you already did, I think may... It may simplify matters to exclude that. So let's ask about the two that you have coming up. Will she get the job from any of these two interviews that she has coming up? Will she get hired by any of these two interviews coming up? Okay, let's see what we got here. Will she get hired? 1, 2... Oh, wow. I'm going to have to incline towards the negative on this one as much as I hate to. I'm really sorry. But it's not looking like your time has come yet for these two. But just keep on putting those resumes out there and keep going to your interviews because you will get something eventually. I do know that.
Okay.
You know, so,
thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Best of luck, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. As ever, the search for work continues.
Yes.
Maureen, we have a caller from Texas.
Thank you, Carmen. Hello, Texas. Hello, Texas. Texas, big old Texas.
Hi.
Long.
Hi
there. May I have your name, please?
Hi, my name is Belle.
Hi, Belle from Texas. May I, what can I help you with?
Well, I'm a pretty spiritual person, and I've been working on
certain things specifically, and I was wondering if you could tell me. I'm kind of wondering if I have any spirit guides or angels, and I was wondering like if there's any gifts I have with any kind of divination. So, like maybe okay. certain tools I could use.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is you're a spiritually connected person, yes, correct? And that you're exploring everything, is that what you're, or you already know that what you, for me, for instance, I already knew, I didn't know, but then it hit me years later, and then I know now what I was supposed to be doing, but I had to do everything else to figure it out, and it was tormenting. For you, what I'm asking you is there something right now that you're authentically connected with at this time, today, this moment, that I feel you are?
No, the only thing I do on pretty much on a daily basis is meditate. And so I tried
right.
a little bit of crying and a little bit of automatic writing, but I'm
okay.
wondering.
I got it. So you're looking at some other type of universal tool is what you're saying that you're interested in. Like, and, you know, some people use pendulums, some use tarot, some people use numerology, all that. And so you've done some things, but they haven't been really connected. Okay, since I can only do one question per reading per person because of our time restraint in here, I mean, you asked about guides and stuff, and this I'm not going to go much into that, but really this is the way I see it. This is the way I feel about it, and I can see it. It's not about the guides that are guiding you. It's you. It's in your heart. It's you. And I do feel that you've done a lot of useless sacrifice things for yourself. This is a very good time for you to go inward. It's been there's a lot of, you know, a lot of times we go through stuff that you reached this point where it's going to be a really interesting time, a very difficult time, because your eyes are wide open to everything, right? Except,
yes.
You know what I mean? I miss those days, but I also remember I was sick physically from looking at everything. I would like to say this to you. Are you alone by choice? It's so much better to be by yourself if you can be, or have solitude to be able to do some exploring and what you're involved in and what you're heading towards. Because I do see that if you aren't, it will be a bit more difficult. You'll be in a much better relationship. You know what? Anything, you know, I'm not sure exactly what your niche is going to be, what is going to be doing it for you. I would suggest do exactly what you're doing. There is something I'm seeing here with somebody that isn't really positive. It's like a couple. And then I'm seeing some really interesting individual. Yeah, this is not about relationship. I'm not answering your relationship, but because it's part of your process, in the next 2 months, you're going to connect with somebody that's as interested in what you're looking for, or what you're not sure, or maybe what you already know, but you just have to. It's almost like you're almost touching exactly what it is. My, and it's going to be an individual that you'll really connect with. Like I said, I'm not saying it's, you know, it's anything of that, but it's a real kindred spirit. It's lovely. Everything that you wish and desired will come to be, and it will be within the next 9 weeks. You're going to know exactly what works well. I feel that you're going to be able to work all the elements. I believe you're going to be able to work all the, you know where you came from above, that's creator, and you're going to be able to bring anything into manifestation. My feeling is you should do some automatic writing. And I also feel that you should also research into the tarot, and not like a regular way. Just look at everything write down automatically what you're seeing or what you're getting. That's what I'm getting.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that helped you, really. You're going to be fine.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you, Maureen. So we are waiting for, we had a caller come through, and unfortunately we lost California. Actually, California is still there in spirit, but we lost our caller. So to wrap this show up, I just wanted to just recap with you. Thank you for all of you for coming, and thank you for all of you for calling. And for putting up with some of our problems with our chat room. That doesn't mean you can't hear us, and of course we can hear you. And we are going to actually have another caller come through, apparently. Great. Steve, we have a caller for Virginia for you. Here you go, Virginia.
Hello.
From who's Virginia. Calling from Virginia?
This is Lakeivia.
Lakeivia? Hi, Lakeivia, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. How can we help?
Well, I have questions regarding my marriage. You know, we've been going through some things, and I'm trying to see, you know, like, where is it going? Will we make, you know, will it get better? You know.
Okay, let's have a look. Let's have a look. Let's have a look. Let me see. It doesn't, I mean, I have to say to you, it feels really tough right now. So I know you said that you're having some issues, and we all know relationships are problematic at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though the situation's really challenging. So I feel as though you've toned it down in terms of the way you've described it. Now, I feel that although you are motivated to understand what's going on in the relationship and to work on it, I feel as though your husband is behaving in a more defeated or pessimistic manner. So I feel as though you feel like you're pushing water uphill because you're trying to now really identify how you can sort things out, how you can make things work, but it's as though you're working on your own because he seems to be handling the situation in almost an immature way and really in a defeated manner. And I feel for you because that's really challenging, and I feel that you're quite alone in your messages of love and possibilities and optimism for the future.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're extremely loving, and I know that you've put a lot into the relationship. Now, you have to remember that we can't predict an outcome for you with 100% accuracy, because if we you wouldn't have any
free will.
That's why
like, what should I make you know, it's never good to just, like, you know, you got 10 years in marriage, you got kids, you know. That's why, like, am I doing the right thing? I need to give up, you know, but I have my kids, my foundation, my stability, you know. So it's just, like, real hard.
Yeah, I know. Look, honestly, I feel really strongly that you're doing everything you can do, and I honestly feel like part of your message to your husband needs to be simple. It's the message that you haven't given up, that you value marriage, you value family, you're very very much aware of the children and your understanding of the responsibilities involved in family. But I feel that you need to clearly give him the message that whilst you don't want to give up, you can't do this alone. That he needs to step up. He needs to make an effort. And I feel as though that's really all you need to do right now. You need to do that, not really take any action, and see over the next 5 months, I feel, whether he does make an effort. And I feel that in a few months, you're going to know where you stand, because either he will have really made an effort, he'll have woken up, or he won't have, and you'll be quite passive and indifferent about the situation by that point in time.
Right.
But I'm not putting the onus completely on him, because relationships don't work that way. But
right.
I don't feel that he's trying, and I don't feel that you should exhaust yourself being the only one to try and address this. You need to keep it simple. If you want me, if you value our marriage, if you value our family, start making an effort. And you got to see over a sensible period of time, and that means not years, whether he makes an effort and really that's going to be the answer, whether he makes an effort or not. You'll know.
Yeah, and also, like, is he going to make an effort in coming home, or he? That's going to be on me as well to, you know, to start that gap and say, and then he'll follow, you know?
I feel this is tough, Lakeivia. Okay. I don't feel like he's making much effort. I don't feel like he's going to make much effort.
Okay.
And I feel like you've got to get on with your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens. But I feel as though life has a lot to offer you. I feel that the family can be fine, the kids can be fine, you can be fine, and life can be good. But
okay.
I don't necessarily feel that he's going to make the effort
required. Okay, so he's not going to make the effort.
But regardless of that, you have to almost give it some time and see if he does or not. And if he doesn't, you've got to come to peace with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Many of us do have to try and come to peace with a lot of things that come into cycles, points of endings, new beginnings.
Right.
Lakeivia, Steve, we've come to the end of our program for tonight. Lakeivia,
okay.
I hope that's answered some of your questions.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
you're
thank
welcome.
You.
Steve, all right, you guys enjoy your night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Call us at www.psychicaccess.com, and you can find any of our readers here, Maureen, Carmen, and we have Steve Frampton and Stephen Lewis, both astrologers that you can find on our site. You can identify us through our pictures, and we'll be more than happy to continue our conversations there. And you should also meet some of our other wonderful readers on this site. Please do give us a call. And Steve, tell us about next week's show.
Well, we're going to be looking back at 2012. Carmen, you know, we're in the run-up to 2012. There were lots of doomsday theories and lots of talk about the Mayan prophecies, the Mayan calendar, etc. And we have a wonderful guest, Shannon Kring-Buze, who made a documentary about 2012 and the Mayan prophecies and many sacred texts. And she's going to be talking to us about what all of that actually meant. We'll be looking back in retrospect at 2012, but also understanding what 2012 meant for us as we progress into the future and evolve.
And goodness, let's learn something from 2012. And I look forward to that next program, Steve. And thank you to all the people behind the scenes, Doug, our executive producer, and everybody that listened to our program and helped make it possible by calling in and giving us your input. Have a lovely, wonderful evening and a safe week. Take care, all. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.